So this morning we were in the territory of looking or doing our best to look at direct experience and looking into thinking and maybe discovering a little bit, but all those thoughts which tend to dominate our minds, dominate our consciousness, are really quite insubstantial, but there really isn't much there. What gives them their power is that we invest energy and time and belief in them. And in general, we're exploring this area of separating out experience before, or attempting to, as best we can, separate out experience before we put interpretations onto it from the interpretations and the views, and the ideas, and the stories, and the concepts. And that process can keep on going and keep on going. There's an awful lot of building blocks of how we explain ourselves and the world to ourselves. That we tend to take for granted. So it's like there's a lot of kind of like layers of wallpaper which we have to kind of peel off to get down to as much as possible what in the Bhakya Sutta is in the seen, just the seen, in the heard, just the heard, and so on. So it's ongoing work. And we start with what we can find and just keep going. And over time, it leads us into quite fundamental issues. But what's important isn't so much that we come up with the answers. What's important is that we learn how to look, that we learn how to begin to distinguish between what's kind of seems at least to be given in the situation and what we're telling ourselves about it. We do this on a more everyday sort of psychological emotional level. We catch the fact that we have a particular response to somebody, and to start with, we may just assume, well, they're like that. And then after a while, we think, maybe they're not like that. Maybe that's just something that I'm putting onto them. That's just a way that I'm interpreting how they act. They may not be like that at all. So it's the same kind of process, but it's going deeper and deeper. So it's going onto a level where we're questioning the real fundamentals of how we're seeing the situation. So eventually we get down to seeing that time, space, ideas of one and many, all sorts of things which we just take for granted as that's how they are actually a kind of overlay onto our experience. But it all starts from just learning to separate out, what is my experience before I start to interpret it, before I start to put ideas onto it? And it takes practice to really get down more to that sort of direct experience level. For a long time, we may feel that we are doing that, but actually it's still quite conceptual. We're still trying to work it out with our minds, with our rational mind. And that often leads us to a point where we start feeling really frustrated because reality just doesn't fit into the rational mind's kind of pigeonholes. And so we, you know, we work a way to understand, we really try to understand, and then we just, it just doesn't work, it just doesn't fit, it's just doesn't make sense. And at that point, very often you get this sort of frustration, and the whole thing seems just stupid and pointless, or, you know, or you'll never understand this, what's the point of trying? You kind of come to a sort of impasse, and you tend to assume, well, I'm going down a blind alley. Well, you, to some extent, yes, you're trying to do it with the wrong faculty, but actually what you need to do is kind of where your rational mind kind of gets as far as it can go, you need to kind of stop there and stay there rather than give up and kind of come back, if you see what I mean. Because it's like you go as far as you can trying to understand, and then actually there's the possibility of a deeper kind of understanding coming through, a deeper kind of intuitive knowing coming through. So to some extent, getting to that point where you just don't know, it's a good point to have got to. Okay, I guess you're steadily increasing pile of questions. I'm just going to see if we can go through a few of them. I'm going to do my best to formulate this question. Do my best to formulate an answer. My experience in practice seems to be increasingly one of a sense of an ocean or flow of process or experience. And since the spiritual rebirth retreat last year, on which I saw deeply into how much I identified with strong and often painful Vedana, which resulted in a lot of held emotion discharging and clearing over months. Pleased to hear that. I've had more and more of a sense of myself, in inverted commas, forming around identifying with particular aspects or parts of that flow or ocean along habitual lines. This week has been an experience of decentralization. Mm-hmm. And bits of self, in inverted commas, spinning off and almost hovering in a loose constellation, but spacious and in no way fixed. I don't feel scared, brackets, maybe I should. No, don't feel scared, nothing to feel scared about. But would like to know if this is something along the lines you've been outlining, or am I deluded? Just wanted to check it out. Yeah, that's moving in a good direction. And as your practice deepens, there's more. Well, people's practice goes in different ways. We're very particular, actually, in our kind of psychophysical kind of makeup. But that sense of one way in which things can go is more of that sense of more just like energy, and the self being more like a kind of eddy in that flow rather than anything kind of fixed. I remember Bhante years ago in a seminar talking about dhyana, and he kind of illustrated it by saying, well, yourself, he got a piece of paper, and he said, well, yourself is a bit like this, and he drew like, you know, the sort of scroll that a sort of really small child makes, where they just kind of go, ooh, do lots of sort of circles. And then he said, and dhyana is like going up here. So the line went up onto the higher up the page, but then it came back into that circle again. And then it went even further, and then it came back into the circle again. And then finally, he said it could even just go back and sort of forget to come back to this central kind of circling. But if you looked at the circling, there wasn't anything there. It was just a pattern. It was a kind of patterning of energy that he was describing. And yeah, it would be possible to let that go, and eventually for that to not be reinforced, that eddy to just really become part of the flow. So yes, what the questioner is describing all sounds fine if it's developing, and if they want a more personal answer, then welcome to drop me a note. I can answer this one. I was wondering, what is the Pali word used in the sutra about the six elements that refers to consciousness? So the other night, Vajrapriya gave us edited highlights from the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, which is in the Majjhima Nikaya, number 140, I think, about the six elements. And the Buddha talks about the Vijnana Dhatu. I'm wondering if you, this is another question, I'm wondering if you're stopping short of relating the six elements to emptiness, shunyata, which sort of trumps other ways of looking at them. I seem to be gathering that there are various levels of trying to engage with these practices, from the basic, such as your explanation about the, as you would to a child, to seeing through impermanence and connectedness, but then, I understand, through emptiness. I wonder if that actually makes it easier to work with space, only a concept with no reality, and even consciousness. There seem to be various concepts of consciousness. They do. And even consciousness, sorry, as thoughts, which are, of course, empty. Okay. So, let's go into this just a little bit. So, emptiness, shunyata, is used. It appears, sunyata appears in the Pali canon, but it's mainly Mahayana term, as we know. And very broadly speaking, it refers to two different aspects of the Dharma. One is that nothing has any inherent existence to it. Nothing has any fixed core, center, kernel. Whatever experience there is, it's all ungraspable. And I think if you want a sort of practical term for shunya, then ungraspable is quite a good one, because it's the trouble with emptiness is that you tend to feel it takes you very easily into sort of nihilistic territory. There's just nothing there. But or you take shunyata as a really existent thing. It's what finally exists when everything else has disappeared, is shunyata. But shunyata is just a quality of experience. So shunyata is the noun, emptiness. Shunya is the adjective, empty. So there's what's being said is that experiences are empty of anything which you can finally grasp or hold on to. There is no inherent existence there. Everything is conditioned. Everything is flow. Everything is process. So it's not that there is a thing called emptiness. It would be a bit like looking at one of the ponds out in Adishtana and thinking, oh yes, you know, the part of the pond is that is its fluidity. Yeah? And then feeling as if somehow you could take the fluidity out of the pond and say, you know, that's what's really true about it. That's just an abstraction. Yeah? So there's no such thing as junyata. There is, you know, there's always something of which something is empty. Yeah? It's always empty of something. Yeah? It's always empty of... So either empty of inherent existence, or the other way, the other main way in which the term is used in the Mahayana is empty of being able to be adequately expressed in words and concepts. So when we do this work of looking at direct experience, we're in a sense looking at the looking into that empty aspect of things. This is what the Heart Sutra is talking about. So when it says no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, it's not denying experience. Clearly with your nose, say, yeah, there is something here. But it's when we go underneath the, I can have a concept of my nose, but the experience sort of predates, if you like, the concept. Yeah, there's an idea that I'm putting onto this, that it's a thing called a nose. I'm kind of taking part of my experience and conceptually separating it out from what I call my face, and then deciding that, you know, I've been taught that that is a nose. You know, if I was in French, it would be a nez, and so on. And then I add this further concept that it's my nose. But in itself, well, I can't say what it is. It's I can experience it, but so in that sense, you know, there is no nose, yeah, other than in the world of ideas. My dog's got no nose. How does he smell? Terrible. So there are those two main ways in which emptiness is used. So coming back to the question about, you know, how you would, you know, could you use emptiness in terms of the six element practice, it would become a different sort of practice from the one that we're used to in Sri Ratna. I did kind of mention when we were looking at the six element practice that if I got very into direct experience and was feeling like, you know, that's really where things are, then the practice sort of became one of not finding an earth element, yeah, and actually not finding a body. And not finding an earth element out there either, and not finding an in here or an out there, because they're all concepts on top of the experience. Yeah. So it would become a different kind of a thing. But exploring things in terms of the empty nature, whether it's the ungraspable nature of things, that way in which they're... Yeah, they're more like a dream, like a mirage, like a magician's illusion, or the way in which our concepts don't do justice to reality and aren't the same as reality. That's all helpful practice. Let's see if we can do one or two more just quickly. Any pointers on seeing through I am awareness? Okay. Yeah, because we can be identified with any of the five skandhas. And so I said, that sense of identification shifts around. Some of the time I'm the body, some of the time I have the body. And then my hair's cut and that bit of the body is no longer me or mine. It's all very shifting. So we can come down to, probably most fundamentally, a sense that we are awareness. And that awareness can then be very broad and very inclusive. And in a way, that would be a step forward. Yeah. If we identified with awareness rather than with the body and the emotions and the feelings, that would be a much broader, less narrow, less tight identification. But still, I am awareness. So, what's it say? Any pointers on seeing through that? Well, in order to say I am awareness, we have to treat me as an entity, I am, and in order to be awareness, awareness has to become an entity. There has to be a thing called awareness, otherwise there can't be a thing called me that is awareness, if you see what I mean. There can't be an entity called me that is the entity called awareness. But awareness isn't a thing, it doesn't have the properties of a thing. Awareness is the knowing quality of experience. So if we look into that, it gets kind of difficult to see how there could be a me that was an entity that was just this knowing quality. And also, I am awareness is still conceptual. In fact, it's a kind of redundant concept. You know, why do we need the idea? Yeah, maybe I am awareness. The I am is just a redundant concept. Why can that just not be awareness? What do we add to it by saying I am awareness? What's happening actually is that we're bringing part of the story of me and putting it onto, still conceptually putting it onto this idea of awareness. Enough about that. You said, oh yeah, as long as there is a silent observer, you're not there. So by you're not there doesn't mean you don't exist. It meant as long as there's a silent observer, you still haven't attained something beyond suffering. You're not there in the sense of not where you want to be in terms of a goal. Ay, ay, ay. How do you get there? And how do you know you are there without an observer? Or is it a noisy one rather than silent? What is it like to be there? Whoa. Gosh, there's a lot in that. All right. So I did say that as long as there's a silent observer, there's still a subtle sense of subject in relation to an object. There's an identification with awareness, and experience is the object. Yeah. So there's still that subtle alienation. Yeah. There's still some very, very subtle alienated awareness, to use Bhante's term. How do you get there, and how do you know you are there without an observer? Well, let's take the second part of that first. How do you know you are there without an observer? Well, you don't. While that experience is going on, there's no you that knows that this is happening to me. But at a certain point, usually, you come out of that awareness, and at that point, you know that something has happened. Yeah. You know that you weren't there. And at that point, sometimes, it can be a bit difficult because, our usual way of ego functioning suddenly realizes that there has been perfectly good, in fact, rather wonderful functioning without it having anything to do with it. Yeah. And that can be a bit freaky. But in the experience, there's just the flow of experience. So it's a bit like a deeper version, maybe, of, when you listen to some music, say, and you start off, there's quite a strong sense of you, and then as time goes on, you get more engaged in it. And then if you get really deeply engaged in it, it finishes and you kind of come back to yourself. Oh, okay. Yeah. But while you're really, if you are the music while the music lasts, as T.S. Eliot says, while that's going on, you don't know. You don't know that you're in that state. Yeah. So there isn't any observer, either noisy or silent. And what is it like to be there? Well, it will have all the qualities of complete flowingness, because there's no pushing and pulling, we're not resisting or trying to cling on to any experience. Everything is fresh and spontaneous. There's no sense of time, because time is created by keeping that sense of me going through the experience. And to do that, we keep a sense of the past and the future, otherwise me has no meaning. So it's just very, very direct, simple, and fulfilling. How do you get there? That's what we need to know, isn't it? How do you get there? The thing is, you don't get there. Yeah. Because it's... the kind of experience we're talking about is what happens when you're not there, so you don't get there. Yeah. If you're there, you're not there. And this is one of the real kind of challenges of the Dharma life as you practice. To start with, it's all fairly straightforward. Here's me, I'm working away, working with my karma, working with my ethical practice, working with my meditation, working to understand the Dharma. And then as things go further, at least some of the time, you get into territory where you're getting closer to experiences where you're not there. I must stop doing this. Closer to some kind of non-dual experience. And you can kind of intuit sometimes that there's something that you're on the edge of almost. And Dharma centers there's a lot of spiritual practitioners, Dharma practitioners, who are kind of like on the edge of the cliff, working out how to throw themselves off into the vast blue sky. But you can't throw yourself off, because every time you try to make an effort to do that, that's reinforcing the sense of self again. So you think, all right, well, I won't make any effort. I'll just give up. But then sort of nothing happens. So that doesn't seem to be quite the answer either. So you can't make it happen, and you can't just give up. So what do you do? Well, all you can do is set up the conditions. And part of the conditions is that you go for refuge as deeply as you can. You entrust the whole process to the three jewels. You have a kind of heart wish, a longing for that freedom. And you hold that in your heart. You just really stay with it. But how it manifests and when it manifests, you can't control. And you don't have to control it. So it's as if you kind of bring yourself to the edge with faith, with love, with a refuge, and you kind of stay there. And we can't quite say how it happens, but at some point you take off. So what gets in the way very often is all those kind of hopes and fears and expectations. You know, will it happen, won't it happen? Am I there, am I not there? All that. So learning to put those down and really have deep faith in the Dharma, deep faith in what we've been taught, deep faith in our own mind, our own heart, and be with that. In a way, that's another way of talking about all this. Yeah. And it's a kind of constant, also just kind of continuing to really engage with the present moment more and more deeply. Because the tendency is that you're kind of engaging with the present moment with half an eye looking to the future moment where it's all going to open out. Yeah. And that destroys it. Yeah. So it's this funny kind of paradox. There's something, yes, we long to be free, we long to know, to understand, and yet we also just need to engage with this moment and let the future, if there is any such thing, take care of itself. It's almost like everything that we need is in the depths of this moment. And then at a certain point, there just is the present moment, and everything's very simple and sort of natural. Take just a minute.
But you were saying today.
Yes.
That you sometimes you need to just sort of throw it all, you know, do things differently and throw it all up in the air. Is there any point at which you need to do that differently?
It's all a question of sort of levels and kind of knowing where you are, you know, at a particular time, you know. I can't even remember the context I was talking about yesterday. I was saying you need to do it all differently. I was kind of letting go of patterns and habits and that sort of thing, was it? You've got the notes.
I've got my notes.
Sorry.
Striving self.
Striving self. Yeah. 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 So we need to have a sense of, you know, how our mind is at the moment. Yeah. So it can be everything from, we're working to, there's some kind of unskillful aspect of our life which we're working to transform, and this must stop. And yes, we draw on all the resources of, going for refuge and so on, but we just kind of make a full-on kind of effort from ourselves to just kind of not let ourselves do something which will create suffering for ourselves and others. But there may be other times where we're in quite a sort of subtle state, and it's kind of learning where you start to move from more and more from a kind of karma perspective to a Dharma Niyama perspective. And the more we're moving towards the Dharma Niyama, the more it's going to be a question of relaxing into the present moment, rather than, everything we do is just going to create more doing and more selfing and isn't actually helping. We do need to create, we need to create punya, we need to create positive karma. But we also need to have real faith, as I say, faith in the refuge, faith in our own mind. And really engage with the present, rather than constantly feeling that, the answer is going to be somewhere up ahead. It's almost like we go for refuge fully in that, with that perspective of wanting to gain enlightenment, and then we really engage with here and now. Let's do a little bit of practice. So let's start, so to speak, by invoking a sense of refuge. Could be in the form of Buddha or Ayidam, Bante. Could just be a sense of the qualities of awakening. It helps, we can imagine a figure or figures in front of us or above our head. Even in our heart, wherever feels right. When there's some sense of presence, as best there can be for now, we can entreat, ask the refuge is to guide this meditation, to be present, whatever we need to see, whatever we need to see about ourselves, whatever we need to see about life, may we see it. Whatever we need to understand, whatever would be most helpful, may we understand it. Whatever would help our heart to open, may that happen. Whatever's for the best, may that happen. whatever will help us to be most present, most alive in the present moment. Whether that's grounding ourselves, feeling into the body, or just being open in all the senses. Whatever feels right, or whatever we're guided towards, just do that. And as much as possible, we let ourselves relax into the present moment without distractions, without judgment. Giving up the past, letting the future take care of itself, just caring for this moment. As much as possible, surrendering to this experience. whether it's what we wanted or didn't want. Doesn't matter. This is what's actually happening. This is the only thing that's happening. Nothing special has to happen. It will be quite simple, just natural.